Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The beginning of the year is a banner time for self-improvement, to which many of us are trying to form new and better habits. It might be eating healthier or going to bed earlier, maybe not looking at your phone so much. But forming those habits can be a big task to take on. Habit formation expert BJ Fogg says, to change big, think small. Fogg is the founder of the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford University and author of Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. While he was in town talking about that book, he stopped by Studio 3, and he told us the first thing to keep in mind is that we change best by feeling good.
There's very little evidence that taking big leaps and using willpower and motivation and guilt succeeds in the long term. And when people fail, they blame themselves. They don't blame the program that set them up to fail. They think, oh, somehow I'm damaged good. Somehow I lack willpower. I can't change. I'm bad at change. And one of the things I'm trying to do with Tiny Habits is help people see that it's not a character flaw. You're not the problem. You just haven't had the right way to change yet.
So early on in the book, you have this equation that is the right way to change. It's B equals MAP.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So I call it the behavior model, and it is a model that describes any type of behavior. And it basically goes like this. A behavior happens when three things come together at the same moment. There's motivation to do the behavior, there's the ability to do the behavior, and there's a prompt. And when those three things come together at the same moment, you do the behavior. If one of those elements is missing, you don't do the behavior. And so this model applies to one-time behaviors, it applies to stopping behaviors, and it also applies to behaviors that we repeat, like habits.
Aren't there habits we need to build that just don't lend themselves to those three things easily but still need to be built? And if so,
yeah.
how does this apply there?
Well, let me go a little bit further. So this model applies to all types of behaviors. And so a habit basically is a behavior you do that gets wired into your brain, so you do it without thinking, without deliberating very much. And in Tiny Habits, I try to set the record straight that the way a habit forms is not through repetition, but what forms a habit is the emotion you feel as you do the behavior or immediately after. The way that you hack your habits, the way that you wire them in very quickly, is you cause yourself to feel successful as you do the behavior or immediately after. And it's that feeling that makes your brain take note and creates the habit.
How could repetition not create a habit, though? If you do it over and over again, muscle memory would suggest that.
Well, when you look at the research that most people cite, the most current research is a 2009-2010 study, and you look at that, that research was not designed to show causality. So the design of the research and the statistics shows a correlation between repetition and habits, but it doesn't show that it causes the habit to form.
So let's get very practical for our listeners. Why don't you give a couple examples of what this behavior equals motivation, ability, and prompt in a tiny way?
Yeah, and there's a part on the model where you will do the behavior, even if motivation's low, if it's easy enough, if it's super easy. So when I looked at my own model, I said, okay, what this is saying is I could create a habit and it wouldn't be subject to fluctuations in motivation if the habit is super, super, super tiny. So that's what I did. As an extension of one of my Stanford classes, I started coaching 6 people on putting on sunscreen, but it wasn't putting on a full face of sunscreen. It was one drop. And the team.
But what good is one drop of sunscreen?
Well, this is what we were exploring, right? I like breaking new ground. I like pushing to the extremes. And I instructed them on every day, you know, after you brush, put on one drop of sunscreen and so on. And it was so easy for people to do, even when they were busy or distracted or not so motivated, they could still do it. Then the next step in my own life was to play around with a whole bunch of habits in this way. For example, I felt kind of bad about not flossing my teeth. So I decided that I was going to pare it back to be just floss one tooth, find where it fits naturally in my life. So in this case, it's the prompt. What does it come after? What's going to prompt me? That's part of my model is prompt. And you don't use alarms or post-its. You find an existing routine to remind you. And in flossing, it's kind of obvious. It's like, after I brush, I will floss one tooth. And so that is the tiny habit recipe.
Okay, so I'm reading the book, and yeah. I read about the one tooth. And there's a piece of me that's like, yeah, no, I totally get that. And there's another piece of me that's like, I am not going to floss one tooth. I'm not going to do it because all my teeth need flossing. So yeah. Don't I just feel silly flossing one tooth?
Well, so I've coached over 40,000 people in this method. So I've seen all sorts of reactions. And some people react that way. And some people have mixed feelings like you do. One of the things in the Tiny Habits method is you can always do more than one tooth. You can do more than two push-ups. You can do more than pour the glass of water. But if you do more, you count it as extra credit. And it's not a requirement for the next time. You don't raise the bar on yourself. So, for example, say you want to do push-ups daily. And you might think, well, it'd be nice to do 10 or 20. Well, set the bar really low, just one or two push-ups. But that's hard for you. Just do wall push-ups. And that then becomes the habit that you do every day. If you keep raising the bar, you're going to reach a point where you eventually fail. With tiny habits, you set yourself up to succeed every time. And the times you go beyond expectations, you chalk it up, like I said, extra credit. You're an A-plus student. You're the kind of person that goes beyond the minimum.
So what are the limits here? I mean, you talk in the book about these habits can scale, but at some point they stop scaling. You talk about the guy who now
planks
for 5 minutes. He's never going to plank for 50 minutes.
Yeah.
What if you need a 50-minute habit?
Well, you certainly can. Now, planking 50 minutes would be just extraordinary.
Yeah.
But there are some habits like planking that will top out. There are other habits that won't, or that you just run out of time in your day. There are habits where the intensity might get, let's take meditation, for example. So maybe you don't do longer meditation, but the quality of the meditation will increase. So there's different ways that habits improve and scale. And sometimes it's time, and we're all pressed for time. But other times it's quality gets better.
It's hard for me to imagine that there is any behavioral science that works for everyone. Are there personality types you've worked with that when you've collected the data, it just doesn't take for them?
Yeah, it's a great question. My work is looking at how behavior and habits happen for human beings generally. But you're right. There are some people that they've tried to do the big things before, and they know it doesn't work for them, and they, bam, tiny, I'm in. And then there's other people that say, wow, I need big changes, and they just can't understand that the way you get to big changes is by getting those habits rooted and then allowing them to grow, that it's a natural process, and it's the way things work naturally.
So what about breaking habits? I mean, there's forming habits, but then there's breaking habits.
Right. And it's a different process. Just like planting a little maple tree and growing it is different than pulling it out of the earth. But you can use the tiny habits method to help you. So if we go back to motivation, ability, and prompt, if you remove any one of those items, the behavior won't happen, including a bad habit. So I had the habit at restaurants of when bread or nacho chips would come, I would eat them. I mean, I love that stuff.
If the chips are on the table, I'm going to eat them.
Right. And I just recognized that. So I created a habit, and it went like this. After I see somebody approaching me with bread or chips, I say, no bread, please. Three words. What that did was two things at once. One, the prompt of having bread on the table saying, eat me, was not there. And my ability to eat bread was vastly reduced. Sure, I could reach over to somebody next to me. Yeah, I could reach over to somebody else's table and grab it. That would be awkward.
So let's compare and contrast. I tried two tiny habits sort of in preparation for our discussion. One was, short version is, I'd like to start playing the piano.
Yay.
There's a room I'm in every day where I have to turn the lights off, and there's a piano in the room. So I tried, before I turn the light off in this room, I will play one note on the piano.
Okay.
Which immediately became 3-4 notes and then a chord.
And
never don't remember to do it.
Good for you.
The other one was, I want to drink more water. There's a drinking fountain right outside the restroom here at the office. Every time I walk out of the restroom door, I will take a drink of water from the drinking fountain. I never remember to take a drink of water. And it's sitting right in front of me.
Yeah.
Why is one working and the other one isn't?
Well, if I had to guess, I mean, we could talk longer about it, is that you want the habit of playing the piano. There's something in that behavior that you want more. Your motivation is higher for that.
It's to connect with my son who loves music.
Okay.
Because I know he'd love me to be playing an instrument again.
Boom. There you go.
Okay.
And one of the things I talk about a lot in Tiny Habits is create habits you want, not the ones you feel like you should have.
Which would be the drinking more water.
Yeah. Now, some people really want to drink more water and they can readily create the habit. One of the classic problems is people try to form habits for things they don't really want. And that doesn't work very well.
Okay.
And so clearly there's two big maxims that I talk about in Tiny Habits. Number one, help yourself do what you already want to do, not what you think you should do. Number two, help yourself feel successful, because it's that feeling that wires in the habit.
Could these kinds of methods be applied to, let's say, something like OCD or addiction?
In terms of OCD, I'm not an expert on that, but the parents who have kids with that have applied it, and they report back to me that it works well. I'm likely not going to study that from a scientific perspective because it's not within my area of expertise. In terms of addiction, wow, that's complicated. We do need a lot more attention and understanding about addiction and how to help people. But forming habits is trivially easy compared to some of these challenging addictions.
All right. So when one understands what drives people's behavior and how to condition that behavior, there can be a fine line between that and manipulation or controlling people's behavior. In 2018, Wired Magazine said that the Stanford lab that you run, quote, created the formula to make technology addictive, end quote, based on techniques that people were learning in your class as you explored this. What is your response to that?
That was an interesting article. There are statements in there that are just downright not correct. In 2007, Facebook launched what they call Platform. And it's my way to explore it. Like I do a lot of things, is just let's dig in and figure out what this means. And so I created a class at Stanford, and the students created apps for Platform. One of the main techniques that I taught the students was simplicity. Simplicity changes behavior, because I'd seen that over and over. And you fast forward to today to Tiny Habits, it's about simplicity. And what the students learned in the class wasn't a whole bunch of influence or manipulation techniques. When Wired said that, they're wrong. What they learned is, how do you make something so easy to do that it doesn't require lots of motivation? In fact, as we were going through that class, we were about 3 weeks in and the students were not shipping their apps yet. And I was getting nervous. So it was Friday and I got up and I said, look, you've got to get an app into the ecosystem, or every day you don't have one there, you will lose half a grade for the entire quarter. So what happened typically was the smarter, more sophisticated engineers would say, well, we're going to keep working on our, you know, really cool app, and you who have less talent, go create something simple and stupid and just get it done by Monday. And what happened in every case without exception, the big, complicated, super cool app never took off. It was always the super simple one that took off. And that's what I preach today, is simplicity changes behavior.
And what ethical boundaries do you create for yourself or the students who learn from you about the power of understanding how people's behavior works?
Yeah. Well, I've addressed this since 1998 when I published my first academic/industry paper on this. Like, here's this thing, persuasive technology, it's coming. There's these really good things we can do with it, but there's a dark side to it. And I outlined, here are three dangers I see coming. One of them was data collection about individuals that would then be used, and I called it persuasion profiling. And in 2006, and I'd forgotten I'd said this until a couple years ago, I predicted that even elections might use this against us. Another thing that I warned about in 2006 was videos that you couldn't believe. I didn't have a name for it, but now we call them deepfakes. Deepfakes, yeah. And so I was trying to shine a spotlight on these things, and I naively thought that policymakers would listen and start regulating around it, which they didn't.
All right. So the prompt is, when listeners are done listening to this interview, what is an easy behavior you recommend to them if they are interested in starting to form a tiny habit?
I think if you can, what you should do is write down one person to whom you're feeling grateful for, and just write that name down. Now, later, what that might do is allow you to call them or text them or write them a thank you note. But if I said write a thank you note, that's too hard. So the tiny step you can take is just write down the name of that person and see what happens.
That's BJ Fogg, author of Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. He's also the founder of the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford University. Thanks for being here, BJ.
Thank you for having me.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Walter Wolfman, and Sarah Rose Brenner. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi, and I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.